The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Body Bio. Get 20% off any Body Bio order with code Mike's Tummy. Mortgage CS, become a Mortgage CS Ricky VIP at mortgagecs.com/Ricky. And Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka from Stateside, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe. Subscribe at rightsrickysanchez.com/newsletter. On the show today, Joel Embiid is back. The Sixers win. I have decided on unbridled optimism, and Mike O'Connor returns to the Ricky. It's quite a big episode for you. Quite a big episode. Before we get going, I did mention Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka. I usually keep a can up here to show it. CJ, the Phils won tonight, right? Or they were up when I turned it off. Bryce Harper, 3 home runs. If you look in the crowd at Citizens Bank Park, you will see one beverage in thousands of hands. That is Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka. And the reason that people have adopted it, aside from its origins in Philadelphia, is that it tastes awesome. Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka tastes better than anything in its class. Nothing is in its class. Only 100 calories, just the right amount of sweetness, just a little bit of sugar, and no bubbles because iced tea does not have carbonation. Go to statesidevodka.com. You can order yourself a variety pack where you can get all the flavors. You got to be 21 to drink it. And before I get going, we haven't done an Abby shirt in a while. It's been a while since we did an Abby shirt. I think the Spike Eskin is a Liar one is the last one. She did a special Kelly Oubre t-shirt, which is available only until midnight on Thursday. Of course, it has the drawing of Oubre, and it says, you're a bitch, and you're a bitch, okay? Your mom's a bitch, your dad's a bitch, and your grandma's a bitch. It's only on sale for 3 days. You can get it at shibevintagesports.com, but we'll put the link in the description, and thanks to Shibe for being our new merch partner. Thank you to Abby for drawing it. And again, Thursday midnight is the deadline. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who makes his return to the Ricky on the same day that Joel makes his return to the Sixers. That is one Mike O'Connor. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be back. What a good time to come back. Great.
I know you were timing it. You trust me, there were a lot of fucking games over the last 2 months that Mike or I wouldn't have minded taking off. You certainly timed it well, buddy. Mike is off.
Of all games, I also took the Oubre game from Mike.
Yes.
That's wrong.
No, he didn't have, we didn't hit 5 assists again, did we? I don't think. But he did. But he did seem to, toward the end of the game there, start to figure out the Embiid Harden pick and roll thing a little bit. Oubre did. It was the first like successful pick and roll I've seen him run in his entire season here with the Sixers. But we'll get to that in a second. So first of all, Mike Levin is not on the pod because he is coaching, I believe, is it Alyssa's first game of the year of the season? I think it is. CJ, is that correct? No, he doesn't know. I think that's what he said. So Mike O'Connor filling in. So we had an eventful, strange couple of days, which is the only way that the Sixers would have it. The report comes out on Monday from both Woj and Shams that Joel Embiid's return is happening. It will happen this week, and it could even happen on Tuesday. The Sixers responded by declaring Joel Embiid out on Monday. Then at 1 o'clock today, also declared him out. And then 5:30 today, also declared him out. Also happened in this this time period is a video leaks on social. I don't know if you saw this, of Mike, of Joel working out in Toronto that was clearly professionally shot, but not released on Sixer social or Drew Hanlon social or Joel Embiid social. It was just fucking out there. So then they declare him out at 5:30, but at 5:35, which I thought was actually past the out deadline, they declare him questionable. Woj says he plays, and there he is. It was as Joel and Sixers as you would expect that it would be. He couldn't just come back normal. He had to come back this way. He had to make the entrance.
It was the Denver game in reverse.
Right.
It was, he's out, he's out, he's out, he's out, he's in. And it's just, it's so weird. Why are they so weird? They can't do anything normally. Like, why not just list him as questionable? It's so easy. Yes. Everyone knew. Every reporter was kind of hinting at it. Vegas was hinting at it. Everyone kind of knew he might play. Why was he out? I don't understand.
It's the weirdest thing. And I can say, as long as Embiid has been on the Sixers and we've had these game time decision type things, anyone who I've ever talked to has always said that this is Joel. It's like, it's not the team. And it's happened, by the way, through leadership, through like three different leadership groups that we've had this sort of thing. Anyway, so it's an exciting time because if you paint it with a positive brush, which I have decided in my old age in our 11th year of podcasting that I'm going to paint this with a positive brush, that his return, if painted with a positive brush, is like, okay, he's not worn down. He had this 6 to 8 week injury that he took the full 8+ weeks to come back from, that when he was playing, they had the second best net rating in the league, and he has a week and a half or 2 weeks to ramp up before the playoffs. Da, 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 da. So if you're to paint it with a positive brush, this could actually, it's not optimal, but I don't know, like him, he could theoretically be going into the playoffs, like quote unquote, healthy and sort of not worn down. And the best thing that I saw tonight was honestly in the first 3 minutes of the game, he looked like pretty active and spry to me. I don't know how he looked to you, but he looked normal to me. He looked certainly better than when he left, you know?
Yeah, he looked gassed, but he looked like he was not hampered, not injured in any way, which is good. I mean, that's pretty much what you want to see. I mean, I thought he could have used probably another couple days of practice. I mean, it probably wasn't like the best thing to be coming back tonight. He probably could have used like a couple more scrimmages, maybe like ease his way into like a 25 minutes type of thing. And then like, then you really start ramping up. But I thought he looked pretty good. I mean, I really leave this game with like minimal concern going forward.
Yeah, to your point, he was gassed. Now he's gassed. He hit the fucking free throws at the end of the game too. Gassed free throws are not easy and are not a given. He hit the gassed free throws. He did wave off Paul Reed to come into the game like three different times in the second half. So I was actually expecting a close game and for him to play like 38 minutes. So the fact that they got out of it with 30 or 31 actually I think is a bit of a gift. It's interesting what you say about him maybe practicing more. I guess, and Nick Nurse made the point earlier today, that there's a number of players who play major minutes on the team that Embiid has yet to play with. Lowry being one, Campaign being another, and Buddy Hield maybe the most important of the three. So I don't know. I guess any game action that he can get, I'll take my chances to get him playing with those guys, because the practices at this point in the season actually don't seem that meaningful, you know?
For sure. It's really valuable. And on that note, like it looked like he'd been playing with Lowry for 10 years. I mean, they figured it out right away, the pick and roll.
Yeah.
I mean, Lowry's going to be so, so good for Embiid in so many ways. Didn't see a lot of the Buddy Hield, Joel Embiid, two-man game. And for me, like, Buddy Hield is kind of on this guy might stink watch. Like it's just starting to feel more and more like the George Hill trade. And that sucks. I mean, I thought he would be like a huge contributing piece for this team, but I don't know. I mean, if you can't be in the closing lineup with Melton, Maxey, both of those guys out, like you're never going to be in that lineup. So he's just kind of like a fringe rotation piece at this point.
Yeah. I noticed the first time they ran, I think they may have only run a dribble handoff with him twice, maybe. And the first one, first of all, it was inside the arc, which was weird to me anyway, but Buddy sort of did this thing that he seems to do a lot where he flinches and he doesn't shoot the ball and he takes an extra dribble. And sometimes he has to almost like fade away when he has a wide open shot. It almost reminds me of Joel, like very early on in his pick and roll game with Harden, where he would catch it in a perfect spot to go up and shoot, but he wouldn't be comfortable to do it. So he would, you know, fake and then take another dribble and then shoot it. But it happened before Embiid, and now it happened. It's only been one game happened with Embiid, but I was going to ask you what you thought of Hield, because watching him, man, this happens with a lot of players, that you have a conceptual version of what the player is, and then you have the reality version of what the player is. But the reality version of Hield, first of all, he doesn't miss when it's wide open, but it doesn't seem like he takes any threes where he only has a little bit of space, and it seems like he takes a long time to get him off.
I honestly wonder if he's diminished athletically and I just didn't really notice it. Like, it's so hard for him just to get a shot off.
Right.
Like those times where he's coming around a screen, like he never has separation. It's just, I don't know. He looks like physically overmatched at this point. He looks like a guy who is like 36 on his last legs and like has nothing left.
Yeah. He's slow. He's particularly slow. And it's a bummer because he did have, first of all, like theoretically, he is something that the team needs. And we've seen so much success with Embiid, with shooters of his ilk or whatever, with Redick and with Seth Curry, just these guys that all of a sudden become the best version of themselves playing with Embiid. I mean, everybody from a 3-point percentage has the best version of themselves, but you just felt like that would be deadly even if other team could pick on him on defense, but it doesn't, we have a few games to see, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be a deadly combination, him and Hield.
No. And you know who would be nice to have in that role is a guy named Isaiah Joe, who hit some shots tonight. I'm not going to like go on the whole rant because he did miss like two of the most wide open threes to tie the game at the end of the game, but.
And one was an air ball, I think. Yeah. I think he airballed one of them. Yeah.
But letting that guy go for nothing is just so criminal, and it belongs on Daryl's permanent record. And I hate that people just like blame it on Doc for some reason. Oh my God. And they could have saved those 3 second round picks if they just had this guy in Buddy's role. Like, it's just such a waste.
So when we were at Fly the Process on Saturday, everybody went to a bunch of people went to the bar where Mike was watching the tournament, and Daryl showed up and Kate Scott showed up, and from like halfway across the bar, I look over at Daryl, like in a very intense discussion, like moving his hands. And I went over and asked afterwards. And I only think it was like, somebody's busting his ass about Isaiah Joe. And it was exactly what was happening. He knows if he walks into the middle of what we're doing, that somebody's going to say something about Isaiah Joe. Well, let's go back to Embiid. So he looked, physically, he looked good. He obviously, you know, he is a guy who definitely gets out of shape when he's not playing basketball. I don't know if that is a want-to thing or if it's just sort of the way he is. I mean, you can get on a bike, an exercise bike, all you want, and on a, you know, an anti-gravity treadmill all you want, but it's different when you're actually playing basketball. So he's going to need to ramp up. His rhythm even started to seem to come back toward the end of the game. He seemed more comfortable taking that like 15, 16 footer. He faded on a couple of them that he normally wouldn't, but it looked like it was coming, like you could see it coming back as the game was going on.
For sure. I agree with that. I mean, I thought that as the game went on, it started to like, the offense sort of became the offense usually is with Embiid, where it's like run a pick and roll, get the ball to him at the nail and just like space out and everybody operate off of him. And yeah, I mean, I just thought like, I knew coming in, he was going to look gassed. He was going to look kind of out of rhythm, but I didn't see anything from a health perspective that worried me. And that was what was like the big thing. It's like, I didn't see him grabbing at his knee a lot. I didn't see him, you know, like just moving slowly or struggling to change direction. And so, yeah, like I said, I mean, you kind of said this at the beginning, this is probably the second healthiest he's ever going to be going into the playoffs. the first being the bubble. So, I mean, it's just like, this could end up being a blessing in disguise in some ways, you know?
Well, I forget which pod it was and why we did it, but I was thinking about the perfect Embiid season, maybe that he misses the first 30 games of the year or something. And, you know, like, because it doesn't seem like he is a guy that you can say you're taking every third game off or you're taking off every back to back. He's just has no interest in doing it. And it's not, I think there's like a certain mindset that a lot of NBA players don't even have. Kawhi was like a special one that year where you can stay in a rhythm and you can miss games regularly like that. He doesn't seem like he's the guy. So I agree. It could be, I think it could be a blessing. I want to talk about a few other things from the game, but before I do, the rights Ricky Sanchez presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. So one thing I noticed, I love futures. I'm a futures guy. I don't know about you, but I love futures. And I love looking at how the futures adjust with like when little things happen. So I'm looking at the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. By the way, if you didn't think Embiid was going to come back today, it went from Sixers were 5-point dogs. Then they announced SGA was out and it went to Sixers are 2.5-point dogs. Then for no reason whatsoever, it went from 2.5 to 1. And that was, to me, if there was a sign on the line that Embiid was going to play, it was the 2.5 to 1 jump. And then when they announced Embiid was back, I think they closed at like -3 or something like that. But the Sixers championship odds, even with Embiid's return, have not changed. They still sit at +3,000. The same as the Timberwolves, the Celtics, the favorite at +200. And to win the conference, the Sixers are, let's see, +1,200. Okay, they're third. They're tied with the Knicks. That seems fair to me. +1,200 feels like a little long. They feel like a +750 team to me with the Celtics at -130 and Bucks at +320. I don't know. +1,200 feels like pretty good odds if you believe in the Sixers at all. Yeah. So if you, DraftKings Sportsbook is a partner, official sports betting partner of the NBA. You sign up right now, you use code RTRS, new customers, bet $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets. If you want to flood DraftKings with Sixers futures, do it. Throw $5, $10, $5. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, only if you can afford it. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use code RTRS. New customers can bet $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only a DraftKings Sportsbook with code RTRS. The crown is yours. So you mentioned Oubre, who I mentioned on one pod that Oubre at one time is the devil and the angel on his own shoulder. Like, I feel like Oubre has an Oubre devil on one shoulder and an Oubre angel on the other shoulder, in that he clearly didn't have it for the first half of the game. Like, he was missing stuff close, he was missing stuff far, but he just keeps fucking firing. He has Starks-like no conscience with his, like, continually going to the rim, continual confidence. He doesn't get any calls, but he still keeps going at the rim. And they don't win this game if it wasn't for him. And I really do think that little pick and roll stuff at the end of the game with Embiid is important, especially if Melton is not going to come back. Because if Melton's not going to come back, Oubre is going to have to play more. And if he can do something other than just putting his head down and going at the rim, like if he can have actions with Embiid, I think that's a pretty big new thing that I didn't expect that they could have in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's really big. And he can help Embiid in a lot of ways. Like, he might be the best dunker spot guy they've had since Ben. Yeah. Like, if you get him the ball in that situation, he's going to get fouled or he's going to dunk it. And, there are some things about him that drive me crazy, but he's a delight to watch. Like, he plays so hard every single night. And sometimes he plays hard and stupid. But it's just fun to watch a guy who cares that much and who's going to play that hard on a minimum contract. Like, that's awesome. I've really grown to enjoy Oubre. And to your point, like, I think that pick and roll thing with Embiid, that's not the only thing. Like, he's really grown a little bit in like the being in the flow of an offense and like playing off his teammates type of way over the course of the year. I think somebody tweeted out that he's had like more assists in March than like the last 3 months combined or something like that. Like he's definitely found his place on this team, and he's going to be a huge contributor in the playoffs.
Were you one of the people, I can't remember. I was convinced he was going to suck because of everything that several people told me. People from podcasters, people from within teams told me he was going to suck. I was sure he was going to suck. Were you sure he was going to suck? Were you one of the people?
I was 100% sure because I was one of those people who told you that, because I know someone who knows very well that the people on the Warriors fucking hated him.
The like, Warriors, that's right. Yep.
And so like I heard that and I was just like, if you can't coexist in like the Warriors system, like what kind of teammate are you? And he's proven me wrong. Like, dude, he's been awesome. And like we're saying, he's really just like found his place on the team.
And they'll need it. Like they will absolutely need it. And I saw that Melton, man, talk about a don't know what you got till it's gone scenario with Melton, given that he can play with basically any other four players on the Sixers. You can put on the court and you can put Melton there. I was glad to see him get shots up before the game. Like I was kind of worried that his back was so bad, which it can get, that the idea of even shooting wasn't possible. So him coming back would be huge, but I think we have to prepare for a world where he doesn't, and Oubre is going to be super important when he doesn't.
Has anyone anywhere like explained Melton's injury? Like, I feel like if there was some sort of surgical option, he would have taken that. Like, is it just a pain tolerance thing?
I have no idea. So I saw CJ, can you look up if they explained what Melton's, it's a lower back thing. I don't know. Was it an impingement or something? The problem with back things is that, at least in my experience, and I've had back problems for 25 years, is that if it's that kind of a back problem, like if it's a structural thing or a nerve thing or a disc thing, it's less about pain tolerance and more about like when it's bad, you can't bend over. You know, that it's not just that sore or that hurts. It's like it is stops you from doing things. So if it's that, and I like to say real back injuries are very difficult to recover from and very painful. The real ones, the ones that actually exist. And Melton does seem like
the ones that Ben Simmons doesn't have. Is that what you're saying?
That's what you said. That's not what I said. And then two other things from the game. And by the way, like we will talk as soon as this is over. I want to talk about the playoffs and I want to talk about the ability of the Sixers to beat the teams that they can face, because I am declaring myself positive and optimistic about these playoffs. Like I have created a scenario in my head where I'm not afraid of the play-in. I in fact like the play-in. I like their chances. We'll get to it in a second. There's two other Sixers I wanted to ask you about. I am trying to not like Campaign, but it feels like Campaign is a really good offensive player and makes 75% of his shots. Like I know he's small. He's pretty slight. He's sort of defensively, he's always going to be a disaster. He does seem useful, like in a 10 or 12 minute a game way, in an optimal situation, that's how much he would play. I wouldn't be scared of putting him in a playoff game at all.
I think he's a good innings eater, like you're saying. I would be scared of putting him in the playoffs for 12 minutes. I mean, he's just going to get picked on defense. And if you're like running your offense through Campaign, you're screwed. So yeah. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've enjoyed him. He's been good in his role. Like, I don't feel like I don't feel like he's like a great, like seventh man to have on your team.
Seventh man seems a little high. Feels more like ninth. Yeah. By the way, diagnosed with lumbar spine bone stress.
Doesn't sound good.
It sounds made up, but it also doesn't sound good. So, and then does B-Ball Paul have the craziest bag in the history of the NBA? Like the shots that he pulls out of nowhere. I thought it was a really good B-Ball Paul game. I thought he was effective. I feel like it's been a really good B-Ball Paul 2.5 weeks or something, but he does pull moves out from anywhere. I would love to see him in an all-star game. I know he never will, but I feel like B-Ball Paul would be a fucking sick all-star game player.
He can kind of like legitimately dribble. Like he went full court in transition, dunked on Chet. Like that's no joke, man. Like he can kind of handle. Like I kind of want to see a 7-win team built around B-ball Paul. Just let him go nuts. Score 30 a game. Like, I want to watch that team.
Because he thinks it's in him. You can tell every time he gets the ball. I say this all the time. Every time he gets the ball, his first instinct is to cook. He is like, I'm going to cook. And he talks himself down off of that ledge. But he does have moves, and he can dribble the ball. He was great, I think, as a backup center. There were a lot of people for the first half of this year sort of cursing that contract, which, by the way, may even be unguaranteed next year if they don't win in the first round. But I'm totally fine with B-ball Paul as a, you know, 6% of the cap or 5% of the cap backup center making $8 million. And I think he's been, especially when he's been in the backup role, knowing what he's supposed to do, I think he's been really good.
Totally. I totally agree. I mean, the question for them this offseason is going to be, is it worth like trading him and a first round pick for like a starter? Like Alex Caruso or someone like that. I don't know. I mean, and then like, is that difference, like, could you make up most of what he is going to give you with like a minimum contract guy? I don't know. Obviously I love Paul. I'd be really sad if they traded him, but that's a question they're going to have to ask.
We've been through a lot of minimum contract guys, and I know Daryl is sure he will tell us over and over that backup center is not that important and you can find them on minimum contracts, even though he continues to find dead ones who fucking suck on minimum contracts. So I would suggest, Daryl, if you're listening, which I know you fucking are, just keep the good one for $8 million and figure it out otherwise. Figure it out a different fucking way. Before we go away from this game, two things I wanted to show you. First, God bless Mike. Mike had a great... So the Sixers post Joel Embiid sitting in the locker room with a basketball and a piece of paper, and it says, I'm back. It is clearly photoshopped. There's no way Joel Embiid is sitting in the locker room with this. Mike responds, would kill for this to be his handwriting. The basketball is helpful for clarity. This is the face of a man who has watched Embiid-less Sixers as much as we have. I love him. It's the year. Mike, it was clearly not the photo. Now, this was from the 70-point game or whatever, but clearly not the photo.
Boomer Facebook Mike falling for a blatantly fake article.
Well, Mike hates AI, so he must hate Photoshop as well. And then I just thought the Sixers posted the intro, Joel Embiid's first intro in over 2 months, and I thought it would be, how could we not play that intro? So here it is. Here is Joel Embiid's first game since January. Is that when the last time he played? January. Go ahead.
And it's 7 foot from Cameroon. Number 21, Joel, the process.
Can you believe, first of all, can you believe there were people that said they should not play him this year? Just pack it away. Yeah.
Crazy, crazy take. I mean, even if you don't think that they have like legitimate chances of beating the Celtics, like I want to see a healthy Embiid against the Celtics. That'd be awesome. Be fun to watch. I just want to see it.
What's the worst that happens? They fucking lose. They lose all the time. Yeah.
Right, you do it every year.
The put him away and let him get healthy and save him for next year is third year of the process shit. It's not 11th year of the process shit. 11th year of the process shit. We're all about to die. All of us. We're all on, you know, we're all on death's door. Sorry, Joel, you included me, everybody. You have to take every shot that you get. And honestly, anyone who was thinking that, hopefully, I understand where the thought comes from. I've been there before, but I hope anybody who thought that, watch tonight, saw them win this game. And I know it was Oklahoma City without SGA. And who else didn't they have? They didn't have the other Jalen Williams. They didn't have their best shot. We didn't have Maxi either. And a win like this at home over the team with the best record in the Western Conference with Embiid looking good, that's why you bring him back. Like if he is healthy knee-wise, that's why you bring him back. So.
100%.
Yep.
If Vegas thinks they have the third best chances of winning the East, how could you not bring him back?
That's actually, even if they're plus 1200, that's a good point. like the third best. They've been awful for 2.5 months, and with this guy back, Vegas is like, yeah, that if it's not the Celtics or the Bucks, it'll be the Sixers. That's the way it's got to go. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Body Bio. Yes, Body Bio. So we love Body Bio. Body Bio is a family owned and operated supplement company in South Jersey. They care about your brain, your gut. You keep those two things healthy, your gut, your brain, the rest of your body is probably going to follow. Body Bio, trusted by and recommended by over 10,000 doctors and healthcare professionals. And one thing that they have expressed to me over and over again is how important everything being high quality to their standards is. Like, so every batch of every single one of their supplements goes to a third party lab. The third party lab tests it. If it fails, they don't sell it. So much so that some people have complained about Gut Plus being sold out for a while, Calm being sold out for a while. If something about the ingredients is not working and something about the formula is not up to their standards, they just don't sell it. And they wait until they get it right. That is who you're dealing with Body Bio. It's your body. It's important. The two products we always recommend that you should try. One, Elite. I have it right here. Hydration is about more than drinking water. Everybody says, oh, you should drink 60 ounces of water, drink 60 ounces of water. You need electrolytes. The great thing about electrolytes from Elite, it's just electrolytes. No sugar, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, nothing. You don't need to drink a big sports drink, purple thing. You take a capful of this in the morning, take a capful in the evening, put it in whatever else you're drinking. You won't even taste it if you put it in that. It keeps your body, along with water, properly hydrated. It helped me a lot because I had cramps in my feet, cramps in my calves, cramps in my thighs. Went away as soon as I started using this. And if you have tummy problems, Mike uses butyrate, sodium butyrate. It is, if you're going to use one gut supplement, try that. When you go to bodybio.com, use code Mike's Tummy. That is Mike's Tummy for 20% off any order. Mike's Tummy. Body Bio. Bodybio.com. Body Bio. Body Bio. All right. So here's where I am on the playoffs. Obviously, everybody would like for them to get to the sixth seed. They're not getting to the sixth seed. Most likely, they're 2.5 games back. It would be nice to play Cleveland in the first round. I am at the point where I believe beating Miami in the play-in would be such a mental victory for the Sixers. Mike talks a lot about the Sixers have not beaten a good team in the playoffs ever. In this era, they've never beaten a good team in the playoffs. Wizards weren't good. Brooklyn Nets weren't good. Heat weren't good when they beat them. It was the Josh Richardson Heat. If they beat the team that A, has Jimmy Butler, B, was in the finals last year in the play-in, I feel like that momentum is worth the risk of losing. Your thoughts?
I don't know. I can't get too worked up about beating the Heat in the play-in, honestly. The play-in feels like such a cheap, like, we're not even sending them home. Like it's like a, like a regular season game, you know, like plus like I kind of want the Celtics, not because I think they're going to win, but I want like a guaranteed healthy Embiid against the Celtics. Going to have to play them eventually. Might as well do it in the first round. Like
I'd rather have Boston than Milwaukee in the first round.
I guess so. Not because I think that they have a better chance of winning, but like if I told you you could guarantee one of these two things, you could either guarantee making out of the first round or guarantee having healthy Embiid against the Celtics, which would you choose? I mean, Embiid has gotten injured in the first round the last three consecutive years. Maybe those were all freak injuries. I get it. But like, I just want to see this guy healthy against the Celtics so badly. I don't know. That's what I want.
So I don't know why. And maybe if we were playing the Celtics, I would feel it again. But to me, beating Giannis and Doc in the first round, I know Giannis is not a real, I guess, fucking rival in any way, but he's a real guy. You know, in the conversation for who's the best player in the NBA when healthy or whatever, he's one of the four players in that conversation, four or five players in that conversation, right? We put Obviously, Jokic is in that conversation. Giannis is in the conversation. Embiid is in the conversation. Is Luka? I don't know. Who am I forgetting? Is that just about it? Who's?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so they're beating one of the best players in the NBA. A guy who brings it every playoffs, for sure, whether they win or don't win. And you're beating Doc Rivers in the first round. And I just... I guess I don't disagree with you in wanting Boston eventually, but for me, beating the Bucks in the first round would almost mean as much as beating the Celtics. Now, I know them going 8-seed, 1-seed to beat the Celtics would be incredibly shameful to the Celtics, which would be nice, but the Bucks losing in the first round would be incredibly shameful to Doc Rivers, which would also be nice. And he was... the Celtics coach at one point, so it would sort of be like beating the Celtics on some level. I don't know. Okay, so let me go through the teams with you. Let's say Melton, what are we going to say about Melton? Let's say Melton, there's a 50% chance Melton plays. I'll just say that. And Embiid, everybody else, you know what everybody else is. Percent chance the Sixers beat the Celtics in a 7-game series in the first round.
28%.
That's pretty high,
I guess. I mean, I've been one of the nation's preeminent Celtics skeptics over the last few years, so maybe this is a biased opinion, but I don't know, man. I think the Celtics are a bigger, faster, stronger quitter. That's all they are. They've just been like the mentally softest team in the biggest spots over the past few years, aside from the Sixers, obviously. But like, I feel like
we watched the Sixers crumble that mentally soft team last year.
They're right, up 3-2. Which says a lot about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Celtics come out and just absolutely no show the conference finals, the first three games. But I don't know. I just feel like the Celtics have all of the same problems they had before. They're just better at the stuff they were already good at. And like this Sixers team with Embiid, that with the Nick Nurse style of defense that is based around scrambling, like forcing the Celtics to help and think and like forcing them to actually make their best players make decisions. I kind of like the matchup. Like I I'm not going to pick them. I don't think they're favorites, but I'm not like someone who believes that the Celtics are an all time dominant team. And I also think that the Sixers match up with them. Maybe not better than last year, but the team kind of just, the schemes make more sense. The personnel makes a little bit more sense.
Well, not having Harden, I think on some level makes it better than last year. So I can tell you this, the Sixers are, and Embiid aside, because I don't know, but the rest of the Sixers, I'm not worried about any of those guys disappearing. Tobias aside, like the Maxi, Oubre, fucking campaign. Like I'm not worried about those guys disappearing against the Celtics. They might lose, but the Harden no show in game 6 and 7 is something that we don't have to worry about. I'm skeptical about every team in the NBA except for the Nuggets, to be honest with you. The Celtics, I don't want to say equally skeptical, because I'd put the Sixers' chances at more like 20%. But to me, they rely so much on step back jump shots, like the entire team, that, and this is sort of like what happened against Miami. If they go cold for a couple of games, it's over for them. And they don't, now you saw with Tatum last year against the Sixers, I guess, was it game 6 that he had 50 or whatever, that it can disappear and then it can come back. But I agree with you that they have similar problems that they've had before. They still don't have like a normal perimeter creator type person that you trust in high leverage situations, because Drew's not even that. Drew's a great player, but he's not the guy that you give the ball to in crunch time.
Right. And all of the disgraceful Celtics fans have completely taken Marcus Smart for granted. All I heard was them talking shit about Marcus Smart. That guy was the toughest guy in every playoff series for them for years. I dreaded every single time he was involved in a play in any capacity. And like, they're going to miss that. Without a doubt, like they're going to miss his energy. And yeah, the other thing that you are bringing up, having Maxi as the number two is such a difference in terms of this team's psyche. Like he's going to get them 40 a couple nights.
Again, yes, in the playoffs. Yes, absolutely, for sure. And he's looked better against the Celtics, I feel like, this year than he looked you know, in previous years. Last year, he looked better against them this year than he did last year. Milwaukee, I think, is a coin flip between the Sixers and the Bucks. Where do you percent chance they beat the Bucks?
I'd put it closer to like 35%.
Ah, okay.
I just respect the shit out of Giannis. Like, that guy terrifies me in the playoff series.
First round.
He missed two games. Yeah, I get it. Like, I don't know. But I just really respect Giannis. I mean, that team has just been there, done that. They have the best player in the world in Brooke Lopez. I don't know.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, that team has such size, which is bound to be an issue for Embiid over the course of a 7-game series. Celtics don't really have that. I mean, obviously they have Horford, who's been great against Embiid, but just the sheer body mass that the Bucks can throw up against Embiid, I think, is going to be really tough.
Let's see, other teams they could play. Cleveland, I would put the Sixers as a 68% chance of beating Cleveland, honestly.
I'm with that. I don't believe in them in a playoff context at all.
No. And honestly, last year, I know it was last year, but last year against the Knicks was their crumbling against the Knicks was as bad as any Sixers crumbling in any playoff series in the process era. Like,
yeah,
all of them, every player on the team, and Mitchell specifically, you know, and they're just a weirdly built team. I would not be afraid of them. The Knicks, Sixers Knicks series, let's say Ananobi's playing, but Randall is not.
That feels like a coin flip to me.
Yeah.
That team really scares me. I mean, they're just so physical, and Brunson in a playoff context is super scary. Like, that guy, you just know that, like, your possessions in late in games are never going to go awry. Like, he's going to make the right decision every single time. And yeah, that team scares me. The physicality, the toughness, the versatility, like, I think that's a coin flip.
He's tough as shit. I'm kind of glad they're not going to play him in the first round. I've watched a lot of Knicks games this year, and he's a great player. He works so hard every game. I know Mike always talks about the amount of minutes Maxey plays. It's true. I don't feel like Maxey is grinding himself down for every point. But when I watch Brunson, I feel him grinding himself down with every, this is a very Tibbs thing. And not that I don't want him to get hurt, but I just sort of feel like at some point Brunson's, whether he just loses it and he's out of gas or he gets hurt, like, I feel like at some point his body's going to give. Every game to me looks so tough for Jalen Brunson. He plays a very physical brand of basketball for a guard, and they depend on him a lot. And that, like, almost too much, I think.
I agree with that. Also, the nurse style of defense, like, you know that he's going to throw so many bodies at Brunson.
Yep.
Like, yeah, it's not, sure. This is not the Brett Brown Sixers where it's going to be single coverage every time. Like, they're going to make Brunson work a lot.
I forgot that you are anti Brett Brown.
I love Brett Brown, but I mean, I think his defensive schemes were completely broken. And I actually, like, I need to have like a Sloan panel debate with Mike about overhelping, because he wants like the Brett Brown defense, and we've seen that fail in the playoffs so many times. I'm team overhelp. Like, I want Nurse being a mad scientist, like, throwing these doubles and boxing ones. Like, I'm team overhelp all the way.
Could you? Okay. So that's interesting. So tell me why Mike is wrong in that.
Because of all the reasons we watched the Brett Brown defense fail in the playoffs.
Which is what? Explain to me like I'm a 4-year-old.
Okay. Brett Brown's defense is basically single coverage, huge drop on pick and rolls, stay home on shooters, pray that guy doesn't make too many mid-range jump shots, right?
Yep.
Over the course of a 7-game series, all great players in the NBA are going to cook you. If you stay in that defense,
like Trae Young,
it's fine in the regular season if you're playing mediocre teams every night or every other night or whatever. But when you get to the highest levels of playoff basketball, you have to play aggressive defensive schemes. That's just been borne out in the results. Like, there's a reason Miami plays all these wacky, crazy defenses in the playoffs. It works. It's what you have to do. There's a reason that Nurse's defense have worked in the playoffs. Like, you have to throw bodies at these people. And like I was saying about the Celtics, like, I want that team to have to make so many decisions every single play. So I want two coming at Tatum. I want the ball swinging to Brown. I want Brown to have to think, where's my next read? What do I have to do? And like, that's never happening in the Brett Brown defense. The Brett Brown defense is pick and roll, mid-range jump shot. It might go in, it might not.
That makes sense. So, and then Mike's position on you is that Mike's counter to that is that the overhelp A doesn't, I think most of his issue is sort of like a half commitment on help, is that they're not doubling and they're not staying home. And so many times they're caught in no man's land and physically they cannot, they don't have like sort of the recovery speed to get back on shooters, which is why it at least feels like the Sixers give up more open threes than any team in NBA history.
So what you're saying is a very valid point, which is that it's basically dependent on your personnel. And like, that's right. Why Nurse's defense works so well, because he had all these wings on the Raptors. Same thing with Miami. Like, it really is personnel dependent. So I will give him that. But if you have those guys, you have to play that defense. You have to.
Right. The Wright's Ricky Sanchez, and there's one more team I want to ask you. Well, two more teams I want to ask you about. Then we'll do a little mailbag. The Wright's Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Mortgage CS. Mortgage CS, an independent mortgage broker. The only place I want you to trust to help you get a mortgage. There are these big ones. If you Google mortgage companies, you'll find these big ones. First of all, do not put your email address or phone number in their little search engine thing or their little mortgage calculator thing, because you're going to get fucking emails and phone calls for the end of time. Mortgage CS will not do that. Go to mortgagecs.com/Ricky. Learn more about them. They're independent, which is important for a number of reasons. First of all, that you know they're working for you. They're the ones, what a mortgage broker does is they go to all the different banks. They find all the different, you know, people they can give you, places they can give you the money, and they find the best one for you. Some of these big, not independent ones have deals with some of those banks. So they could be leading you toward a mortgage that might be best for them, but might not be best for you. That's not what Mortgage CS does. Here's like the key to this spring and this summer. It's a very competitive market right now and will continue to be very competitive. As somebody that just bought a home in 2021, it's not even about getting there first. It's not even about bidding the most money over asking. There are so many different factors. Mortgage CS is going to help you with that. They're going to give you tips on how to bid competitively, they will know the market about what you should bid and how you can get the house. Two, they're going to call the listing agent when your bid is in. Part of getting the house is the seller thinking that it's going to close, trusting the lender that you're actually going to get this loan when it happens. Mortgage CS is going to call and is going to assure them. And then if they don't know Mortgage CS, if they Google them, they'll see over 365 star reviews. They're always available. They are going to get you home. And get you a home. Go to mortgagecs.com/Ricky, learn all about them, schedule a consultation, or just call or text their CEO, Ben. This is his cell phone number. Do it right now. Ask him about Embiid, see if he's awake. 267-391-7425. I'm ordering someone in the chat to text Ben and see if he responds. 267-391-7425. I love doing that. They've never told me not to. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com/Ricky for more information. Sixers Pacers, if it were to happen.
Pacers feel like a fake regular season team to me.
Yep. They surprise you in the first game and then they lose four straight when you figure out what they're doing. That I agree. Yeah. I'm at like 85% of them. If they played the Pacers, I'd be pretty sure that's a win. Make sure to clip that, CJ. And then the Magic are a team who I've only watched against the Sixers this year. And I feel like I have no clue how good they are. I know Mike is high on them. Do you have any sense of how you'd feel against the series against the Magic?
I definitely respect them. They're tough. They have a lot of size and athleticism, but I just can't bet against a team in their first go around in the playoffs. Like, I'm always going to bet on a team with a little bit more experience. And although most of it is bad, the Sixers do have experience. So I'm just going to, I would probably say 65 to 70% favorites over the Magic.
I'm excited for the playoffs. I feel good. I feel like this is, you know, a lot of people are like, you can't, this is a curse. You're going to end up regretting feeling good. But I felt bad every single playoffs almost leading up to this, and it hasn't fucking worked. And as I said before, I'm getting old. I've been doing this podcast for 11 years. Like, let's put this in context. Mike is 34 now. I don't even know how that happened. He was just out of college when we started this. I am going to be 48 this summer. Who knows what's going to happen? Life is too short to not believe. We have debatably the best player in the NBA. We have a guard who is like, is might not be all NBA this year, but in his, you know, is this Maxie's fourth year on the verge of being all NBA, who we love, who gets better every year. We have more good role players than the Sixers have had in a long time. I believe they will win the play-in. And then whether it is Boston or Milwaukee, I will believe in that as well. I'm ready for this one. I'm going in heart open, ready to be hurt.
I'm with you, buddy. And if they get swept by the Celtics and the Celtics win the championship, I will come back here next year and I will say the Celtics are frauds and the Sixers are going to beat them again.
We actually got an email from Goran to writestrickysanchez@gmail.com. The subject line was "Get the 8 seed on purpose." He says, thoughts on purposely going for the 8 seed. We would get Boston, but I think it's our best chance of beating them, as in theory, Embiid would be healthy and fresh versus seeing them in the Eastern Conference Finals if the Sixers could get there by winning 2 rounds. So Goran is on the same page as you with, I would not do it on purpose. I don't think the Sixers are in position to get cute with the playoffs and pick their opponent as the 1 seed, but I wouldn't be scared. I'm not scared of the Celtics. I would love the opportunity to beat Doc. I hate Doc more than I hate the Celtics. So that's where I am. Curious on your thought of this. Here's a voicemail we got to 833 Lickface.
Hey, this is Jack from New Jersey. I'm calling about star hunting and Paul George and giving him the max and how that doesn't seem like a great idea, but it seems like what we're going to do. And I am upset about that. That makes me sad because I don't really want to overpay for a guy after we overpay for a guy who's washed, after we just got off of a contract and Tobias Harris, where we overpaid him and he was just not as good as the contract. Like I don't understand why we would do that again. It seems like more and more that's what it will be. And at this point, like, if you're going to overpay for a guy, overpay for a guy who's going to be worth the squeeze, you know, like I would rather throw 4 first-round picks and a like role player for Mikal Bridges than pay Paul George $50 million a year. And listen, I understand that there's an availability aspect to this. Like, Mikal Bridges has to be on the trade market. The team has to be willing to trade him. But fuck me, dude. Like, please, can we try to do anything else? Anything else? Other than just pay $50 million a year to a 35-year-old Paul George who looks like the 5th-best player on the Clippers this year. And it's oh, shit, man. I don't know.
Your thoughts on Paul George, Mike?
First off, Paul George is way better than Tobias Harris. Way, 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 way better. And I think people are just way overestimating the value of signing a guy in free agency as opposed to having to trade 4 first-round picks. They could sign Paul George and still trade 4 first-round picks for Mikal Bridges.
Right.
Like, they would have to wait so they could compile salaries, but like, that's such an advantage to be able to sign a guy outright as opposed to having to trade for him.
Yeah, I think, trading for Mikal Bridges would get complicated because you would have, I don't want to belabor this, but you would have $50 million a year tied up in Embiid, $50 million a year tied up in, what's it called, in Paul George, $35 million tied up in Maxey. So the rest of your contracts is going to be like an MLE and a bunch of minimums. So I don't even know how you get to Mikal Bridges' salary. I think that the issue that I'm having is that there are, I understand the fear. I understand the fear of giving a 34-year-old guy that money. One thing, he's way better than Tobias Harris, but Tobias Harris was never as good as Paul George ever was, right? Like Paul George is coming down from a peak that is much higher than Tobias's ever was. So I think a diminished version of Paul George is better than whatever Tobias Harris is. But the other thing, thing about the NBA is there are too many teams that have a ton of picks. There's too many teams. So, and who are going to be at some point, whether they're competing now, they're going to want to be competing, right? So whether it's Houston or San Antonio or Oklahoma City or the Knicks, who by the way, do have salaries to trade. I always feel like something like a Mikal Bridges will be so desired by so many different teams that we're just going to fucking lose the bidding anyway. So that's my worry with players like Mikal Bridges that everyone's going to want.
That's a great point. And like the other thing is like, what else are they going to do with that cap space if Mikal isn't available? Are they going to sign DeMar DeRozan? Like, what are they going to do?
Right.
And like, dude, I would easily take, if Paul George is like an all-star level player for the first 2 years of the contract, fucking great. Like that's all they need. Like I just want to see Embiid and Maxey have a chance with like a legit third guy for a couple of years. Like who knows how long this thing will actually last with Embiid's health. Like I would eat, if Paul George is 90% of what he is this year in 2 years, easily giving him that contract.
Another voicemail from 833 Lickface. This was something Mike and I agreed on in the last pod. See where you are on it.
Hey guys, Bill here. Look, it's Jeff. It's not Giff. It's Jeff. The inventor said it's Jeff. You guys don't get to say, well, we know the inventor said it's different, but we're just going to call it this. When you invented, like a new food, and then you said, yeah, this is what the food's called. And then a bunch of other, people were like, oh, no, we're just going to call it this. You're wrong. He's not wrong. He's right. It doesn't matter. The English language has lots of stupid shit and things that don't make any sense all the time. And words are just called what they're called. That's it. He said it's GIF. It's GIF. It's not GIF. It's GIF. He said it. That's all I have to say. Bye.
Mike and I agreed it was GIF.
It's GIF. I don't care what the creator says.
It's like, GIF.
It's like someone with an accent speaking a new language, right? Like, is it really like that horrible if they pronounce something a different way? Like, no, it's just their accent. And that's like what their linguistic programming tells them to do. This is what my programming tells me to do. So I'm going to say GIF.
And here's the one thing that I think the voicemailer does not recognize, and it can be frustrating with language because I've been proven wrong on language in this way. He can say it's GIF, but if everybody else agrees it's GIF for long enough, it's GIF. That's how it works. Yeah. If people say a word differently for long enough, it becomes a different word. So I'm sorry. The inventor of the file format, it's not even a real word. It's not even a word at all. It's GIF. CJ, any thoughts? We didn't get your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm really passionate about this. I don't care what he said. It's GIF. The first word is graphics, interchange format, graphics, hard G, GIF.
Yep. You ever learn how? We have, GIF is a word. It's spelled with a J. This one doesn't spell with a J. So final email. I thought you being a basketball guy, it would be good. We've talked a lot about how bad the Sixers have been without Joel. So I thought this was a good email. Hi, Spike, Mike, and CJ. And this, well, Mike, I guess, works. I love the pod. This comes from Sean. Shouldn't Daryl be building the Sixers to be a 500-plus team without Embiid? It seems true that Joel Embiid is both the best player on the planet and someone who is never fully healthy for a season or a playoff run. This has been true since the Sixers have been playoff contenders. If this is true, doesn't it follow that you need to build a team that is capable of winning 5, 6, or 7 of every 10 games or so without Embiid? And in parallel, shouldn't they consider only playing a healthy Joel 2 out of every 3 games or manage him to be at the league minimum of 65 games so he can collect a few more MVPs and ensure he is going into the playoffs feeling good for once? So, how do you feel about the fact that they have been so bad without Embiid as a condemnation of Morey or the team that they've built? Do you think it matters at all?
It doesn't matter a ton. I would say that I still think that the job Daryl has done is fine, but slightly underwhelming for my expectations. You know, I think he's just, this email is kind of making up rules. Like, you have to be able to win 5 out of 10 games without your best player. Like, I don't know. Like, has that been borne out in like all the championship teams of the past? I don't really know.
By the way, he said 5, 6, or 7 out of 10 games. 7 out of 10 games would make them the best team
ever. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's kind of just making up a rule. Obviously the team would be better if they had more good players. That would be great. But I can't like get too worked up about it.
Yeah, I think also I just remember the LeBron teams being particularly terrible without him. Not the Heat, you know, the Cavs teams being particularly terrible without him. I think when you have a team that is so centrally built around one player on both sides of the ball, it almost becomes impossible to have a team that is also good when that player isn't there, especially if you want to lean into whatever the attributes of that player are. Now you could come back and say, well, how can you do that with a player who you can't rely on to be healthy or whatever? And the answer is that it is the best available option. Is that if you could tell me that they could trade Embiid, well, I'm not even going to say it, but I don't want them to trade Embiid. But if there was a player as good as Embiid who also was healthy all the time, then that would be a reasonable thing to do. But there's just no other option. It's like they have to build around him and just hope it works out one year. It's their best chance at winning a championship.
100% agree. The other thing that you could make as a defense of Daryl here is that they're not all in. They're operating at a surplus of picks this year, you know?
Right.
So it's not like he's spent every last bit of his ammo and this is the team that they have, you know?
Yeah, they have considerable ammo this summer. I mean, more ammo than 4, well, we've been through it, but 4 first round picks when the season ends and then 5 the day after the draft that they can trade. There's so many years that I look forward to the offseason. I'm not looking forward to the offseason. I want to fucking do a fucking podcast after the Sixers beat the fucking Heat in the play-in. And then I want to do podcasts after games of them playing fucking Doc Rivers or the Celtics. I want it. I need it now. I'm going back to Philly. I'm going to be a fucking radio. This is the fucking year.
I love it, man.
This is the one, man. We've all been waiting around so long. We deserve 1 year.
I mean, it would make sense that this is the year because it's been the weirdest year and they're the weirdest team incapable of doing anything normally. You know, like it just feels like it kind of would make sense karmically. This is kind of their style, just completely bizarre season that ends up being the one that they make their run.
Yeah. When you think about it, if this is 11 years and we get 1 year, that's the year. What is that? 8% of the years? That's barely any. It's not even a good return on our time. So it's the least.
It's definitely not. It's definitely not then. Yeah. It's definitely not been a good return.
Nope. So Sixers have 6 games remaining. Let's look at this. This is the part of the podcast where I don't know what. Okay. So they play the Heat on Thursday, then a pretty easy stretch. They've got the Grizzlies, they've got the Spurs, they've got the Pistons, and then the Magic, who are good, and then the Nets. So there's four games in there of those six that they should absolutely win. Grizzlies game, Spurs game, Sixers game. Spurs are now tanking. Vassell is now out the rest of the year. Sohan's out the rest of the year. Pistons stink. That game's at home. Grizzlies stink, even though we lost to them. And then the Nets. So they should win four out of the six. The Miami game is, I would like to have that playing game at home, I'll tell you. And the Miami game is a big game to try to get that first playing game at home.
Yeah. Remain of the opinion, I don't care if they beat Miami in the play-in or not, but if you are, then yeah, that's a huge game.
Is that after the game?
Oh my God.
After the game, so we're looking at a picture, if you're listening to this, of Embiid wearing a D-Generation X Suck It jersey after the game. So he's back. He's back, guys. And then, CJ, throw up the tweet that you put in the chat real quick of Tre'Kavion Smith and Ricky Council IV doing a jersey swap on their own team after the Blue Coats win their quarterfinal, their playoff quarterfinals win.
Next,
same
next
team jersey
pod.
Swap.
Next live pod, you and Mike should do a jersey swap.
Yes, we definitely should. Did you? I saw a clip of Ricky Council IV was on Lauren Rosen's podcast with the Sixers, and she was asking him about all the obviously. His dad is Ricky. His two brothers are Ricky. He said that there's a fifth Ricky, and that is Tyrese Maxey. That Tyrese Maxey is also a Ricky now, too. I was hearing him say that, and I'm like, how has he not been on the podcast? We have to get Ricky Council on the podcast. So, well, it was I told myself I was going to be happy whether they won or whether they lost as long as Embiid looked good. But down the stretch, when Oubre's hitting the threes and they were down 10 with 3 minutes left and they came back and won. I decided they needed to win it. This was a big fucking win. A big fucking win. So
great
and,
win.
And great to have the big guy back.
Yeah.
And Embiid. Big guy by I mean you. So great to have Embiid.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Great to have Embiid.
Can I
back
say one last thing?
Yeah.
The first voicemailer about Paul George. The way that guy talked reminded me of the YouTube video on Good Neighbor Stuff of the sports thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where the guy's like, Ben Jules, why would you do that? It's like, Ben Jules. He's just like spewing nonsense.
No.
CJ, do you know what I'm talking about?
What's the video? CJ shaking his head. No. I'm going to write it down. That way I can look it up.
I think
what
it's
is
called
it?
Like Sports Guy or something. It's like it's on the YouTube channel Good Neighbor Stuff. It's like from way like early YouTube days.
Good Neighbor Stuff?
The whole, yeah. The way that guy talked was exactly how that guy talks in the video. You should watch the video immediately. It's completely ridiculous, and you'll immediately recognize the tone.
Is this guy on SNL now?
Yes, he's on SNL now. Yeah.
Wow, what's his name?
Kyle Longhair.
Yeah. Kyle Longhair?
He has long hair. Kyle Murray.
Oh, okay. Murray. Oh, wow. I'll check it out. As soon as I get off, I will look it up.
It sounds exactly like the first voicemail guy.
Oh, and by the way, now that we have you on, you can subscribe to Mike's writing. So you don't have to sit on. I say this all the time about being able to subscribe to our newsletters now, to subscribe to our writing. But I think it's like it makes a lot of sense the more that I say it, is that the only way that people would know if you wrote something before is if they continually check the website or they're just staring at Twitter all day long. You don't want to have to do either of those things. So if you go to writesrickysanchez.com and hit subscribe, you can subscribe and get Mike Writes just about every week, get Mike's writing, get Andrew Underberger's writing, Dan Olinger's writing. I truly think that we have the best crew of writers for the Sixers like that exist, and it makes me happy. But you can subscribe to Mike's and everybody else is there at writesrickysanchez.com. And finally, before we go, once again, the Oubre shirt only available until Thursday at midnight, designed by our very own Abby. It commemorates one of the greatest moments in process history when he called all of the referees bitches and then called their families bitches. You can wear a shirt with bitch on it. It's not the F word or something or C word. You can wear a bitch shirt. So the link to buy the shirt will be in the description of this podcast. Mike, thank you. Would you do the lick face thing at the end? Or CJ, would you do the lick face thing? Mike?
Whatever you want. I don't care.
Well, if I ask if you're down with TTP, what would you say at that point?
I would say, yeah, you know lick face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for plan B.